My name is Scott Hasserud, and this morning we're going to be considering together a very difficult passage, but hopefully one that's pregnant with possibilities of new understanding for us. I'd like to begin this morning by reading to you a couple of quotations. The first is written by Norman DePue, who's the pastor of First Baptist Church in Dearborn, Michigan. He writes, "The poet Rilke said something interesting about questions. Be patient with all that is unsolved in your heart. Try to love the questions. Live the questions now. Someday, without noticing it, you will live the answers." How true that must be for those Christians who live life daily by faith in a living God. Not a settled life, not with all the answers, but loving the questions in the confidence that He has so many more things to show us. To be able to say with Peter, "I now realize what I did not know before." What a difference in our church witness to the world if we were loving the questions and trusting God for the answers, rather than loving the answers while God is all the time trying to change our minds. to say that we have changed our minds can be an act of worship. There is hardly a person in the biblical record who did not have radical changes of mind. You think about some of the really important characters, you know, particularly, of course, people like Paul and so forth. To know that what we now believe might one day be rendered obsolete breeds faith. How else shall we live with a living God? So somebody gave that to me this week. Now the other reading, which I think is very much like it, but put in different words, is from Alan Watts in his book Behold the Spirit, and it's quoted by Morton Kelsey in his book Companions on the Inner Way, which is available in the bookstore. Oh, by the way, I'm supposed to make another... last year I did such a good job that whatever I was pushing sold in an hour, so David...
Where is that?
Where's the bookstore? Anyway, a book that's been very meaningful to me. I'll show you my original copy here. And all the pages are falling out. My dog chewed on it. Has been reprinted in paperback. It's by John Sanford. It's called The Kingdom Within, The Inner Meaning of Jesus' Sayings. And it's his very first book written years ago. But 15 years ago now, 1970. But it's helpful in struggling with internalizing Jesus' sayings and getting to their inner meaning. So I'd recommend it to you, and I understand that we do have several copies of that available in the bookstore. It's a wonderful little bookstore. If you haven't been there, make sure you go there. Just a delightful selection of things. Anyway, Alan Watts writes, "The trouble is that we are too proud to be children and appreciate the playing of God." I couldn't help but think of that the other night when Phil was playing the piano with his arms. I don't know how many of them. And I thought, you know, Jeanette and I commented to each other, we used to get after our children for doing that. Especially plucking the keys. Here he comes. You know, that might have saved me in my early years of having to sit there and play scales on the piano if I could have played with my arms. And everybody just loved it, even though, you know, there's a lot of dissonance in it. It is just this pride which brought tragedy into the universe, marred the happiness which God created us to share, and made necessary a redemption through the cross. For sin is precisely the adult, unplayful action of taking oneself seriously. By sin, one kills the child in oneself, thinking the playful will of God beneath one, and desiring to be God in one's own right, working out serious, weighty schemes. Children are the happiest when they are doing things that have no particular purpose. And I think loving questions may feel that way to us. That's a note I put in here. Playing with a capricious pup, making up lunatic stories with friends, walking aimlessly through the fields. I really enjoyed our matins this morning with that quotation from Walt Whitman. And hitting at old stumps with a stick, whittling hunks of wood just for the sake of whittling, drawing wayward and aimless designs on scraps of paper. And I should put in here parenthetically other things parents don't like us to draw on. And mixing horrible concoctions of all various types of household liquids, from paint remover to cod liver oil. If any of your children ever got loose in the basement, you know. Right. Someone pointed out that music is the one word we legitimately use the word play with. And maybe that's why it's so refreshing to our soul to play music. And Alan Watts later on in the quotation talks about the fact that good music is playful and needs no interpretation. And that inferior music needs to be propped up by all kinds of explanation of what it means and what it says and what it's supposed to be doing, what its purpose is, and so forth. And I thought that was kind of an insightful thing. So there's a sense in which over this last week, in our times together, we have been playing in God's vineyard, wandering, trying to stick with the questions and loving them in hopes that new treasures may be found that we didn't know were there. Okay, I'd like to read to you this morning first from Matthew 7, and I'll just go ahead and read that. The 7th and 8th verses, you may want to open your Bibles to that so that you can keep looking at it, because it's important to keep looking at it. As you look at it, new things will pop up that you hadn't seen there. In this very old phrase that you've known for a long time and has undoubtedly troubled all of us at some time or another. Ask and it will be given you. Seek and you will find. Knock and it will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives. And one who seeks finds. And to one who knocks it will be opened. I'd like also to share with you a passage from the Gospel of Thomas, which is the Coptic text that was discovered a number of years ago in the desert of Egypt, where Jesus says, "Let one who seeks not cease seeking until one finds. And when one finds, one will be troubled. And when one has been troubled, then one will marvel." Interesting statement. Okay. Let's put on our imagination caps, just say whatever comes to your mind, any association, image, feeling, idea. What are all the possible definitions of the word ask? What is involved in asking? What do you mean, or what do you do when you ask? What's involved? Yeah.
Listening.
Okay.
Humility.
An invitation.
All right.
Exploring. An acknowledgement that the person you're asking has the power to give it to you.
Okay. All right.
Acknowledging a need or a want.
Okay. Acknowledging a need or a want. Bringing it into consciousness, perhaps. Right.
Being ready to receive.
Okay. Being ready. Ready. You acknowledge a readiness to receive. Okay. What other images come to you or thoughts?
Hoping.
Okay, there's a hope involved. There's an expectation involved. Okay. Any other?
Doubt.
Okay, there's certainly an element of doubt. An element of what? Of wondering what's going to happen, huh? Okay. It's not for sure, right? I mean, it's okay. Anything else that comes to mind? The word ask?
Communication.
Okay. There's a communication that goes on.
There's risk.
Okay, there's risk.
That the answer you get might not be the one you want.
All right. Okay. Okay.
There's relationship.
Okay. Yeah, it's a way sometimes, I mean, it's a way we use to initiate relationship too, isn't it? I mean, we ask somebody their name or
direction.
Where they're from, directions. Yeah.
Any kind of asking establishes or builds a relationship.
Okay, it's a building.
It establishes a hierarchy.
And what, say some more about what
you mean. Just in that, I think it was said before that you trust, you're putting that person maybe ahead of you because they have the knowledge of what you see.
Uh-huh. Okay. So it's kind of an acknowledging of a dependence in a way, or a need for them in some way. All right.
There's an acknowledging of interrelatedness.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Based on the belief that the giver is present.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? It's not just it's not an act in a vacuum, huh? Fascinating. Yeah.
You know, Scott, what's tough is when a friend says, I did it and I got it. And then we go to it and we're waiting. You know, and we say, why do they get it and we don't get it yet? It's like maybe all of the stuff that I've been doing or thinking or not doing or not thinking, he's angry. And it's not my turn. Just maybe the fear to say, I don't have a faith like theirs up till this point. But I find frustration.
Yeah, okay.
And for some it seems to be so easy.
All right. At least it appears that way.
Yes, it appears that way.
Okay.
Yes.
Is there worthiness? Am I worthy to receive it?
Okay. That's a question, you mean, that's automatically raised any time.
Yeah. Yes, small enough questions, you're more likely to get the answers.
I was reflecting this morning on how the act makes conscious for me what's already there, but puts me in a new relationship to what is rumbling around in me. lifts it up to a new, I have a new relationship with whatever it is that's moving in me. Okay, what is, it says, Jesus says, ask and it will be given. What is an it? What is it? What are all the possible implications of it? What does it refer to?
Gift.
Okay.
Right. Wisdom.
Okay. So you could ask for a car but get wisdom, huh? What is it? I didn't even ask the question. What is it? What is it?
Whatever.
Whatever. Okay.
It is that which satisfies your real need, is distinguished from what you think your need is.
Okay. That which satisfies your real need, as opposed to which may or may not be what you've asked for, or what you have hoped for. I mean, I want us to really keep in mind all those definitions of ask, because we had a lot of wonderful images that said asking can be something other than asking for something specific, but asking a question, or inviting, or we had lots of wonderful images of what the act of asking, what's involved in the act of asking.
The desires of your heart.
Roger, when everybody was laughing, he said, asked, and life is given for our asking, and all we know is life. And so that comes from that knowledge comes our need, and life is given to take care of our needs. So it could be life.
Okay. All right.
I've always been told, be careful what you ask for, you might get it.
Yeah, that's another interesting dimension. You have to be very careful about that.
I have a plaque at home that says, I asked for all things that I might enjoy life. I was given life that I might enjoy all things.
Okay. Interesting. What is it?
Thinking in the act of asking, I think there's an energy that is given.
Okay.
You were talking about life giving. It frees something up.
Okay. One image that came to me this morning too was, you know, what does it mean for me to stay with the important questions, to ask the important questions, and to stay with them, and have confidence that if I'm able to stay with them, whatever it is that needs to bubble up.
That's vitality.
Yeah.
And that keeps us going.
Yeah. As opposed to settle in on an answer too quickly, or to think I have the answer.
It might be a question.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, could be. It could be lots of things, right?
Yeah.
Okay, now Jesus says, ask and it will be given. What is the word given mean to you? What's involved in the word given? What does given describe?
Listening.
Okay.
Something not earned.
All right.
Reward not earned.
Okay.
No price tag.
Okay.
No stream.
No price tag.
Conditional.
Well, there might be.
There might be, okay.
You know, there are some people who might not get heavily into the faith of sitting in church one Sunday, and they hear the scripture and they say, boy, I'd like to have a new Mercedes-Benz and end up with a donkey. Uh-huh. You know, because they want a material thing. But somebody who asks that I have more wisdom and be a better Christian, and you know, the price tag might be continual discipleship. And there might be something that goes so that there is a connection that does not end at the end of that giving.
Or we ask for a Mercedes and end up with wisdom, and the price is we've lost the Mercedes.
Yeah. What about the guy who asks for the Mercedes and gets it?
That's a long shot.
Okay.
Too little faith.
And it stands up in church and brags about it.
Yeah, right. That does happen. That's the message of Reverend Ike on television, if you ever listen to him.
Given means it's already happened, too.
Ah, okay, that's interesting, isn't it? That it's already a possibility, right? It's already in existence.
Well, trigonometry, given doesn't change. Thing that always is.
Okay.
Geometry.
But you got to figure that.
When you come to God in prayer, you ask knowing that God will give you that answer. It may not be the answer you want,
right,
but knowing full well that the answer will be.
And that's a part of what giving means to me is receiving. You have to, you could be given it, but right, you might not want it. So you keep asking.
So involved in the act of giving it is an awareness that you've received something. It could have been there all along, but you didn't notice. And somehow the act of asking releases that awareness for you that perhaps wasn't there before, right? Yeah. That's a fascinating image, isn't it? Yes.
I was thinking, you know, he was talking about what if you ask for Mercedes and you get it, and then you kind of cast it by. Yeah. But I was thinking of the 10 lepers. You know, they all were healed and one came back to give thanks. And I think, you know, sometimes we don't take that seriously, that sometimes we are given a gift like that, and what do we do with it?
Some people do win the lottery. And it usually ruins their life.
I'm really struck by, I was just sitting here with the words give and give away and stuff like that. Very interesting that in Indian culture, if I were to translate that into Indian language, that statement, ask and it will be given, is not to be interpreted that always you're the asker and somebody else is the giver. In so many Indian cultures, if you read the statement, ask and it will be given, that's a direction to you. If somebody comes to you and asks, give. And I mean, really, in the Yupik village, when they had a baby, when there's somebody in the village who, say, lost one or was in great need, that a woman could come, or a family could come to this woman who had a baby and ask for it, and they would hand it over. And it would be one thing if the people who asked for the baby gave it back, which, you know, quite often you ask for a baby, you take it for an hour or two, and then you give it back. But it is appropriate and okay to ask for it and keep it. The same thing with anything that I own. If I have a need, I could go to anybody and ask, anybody who had that,
and ask, and it would be given, it would be appropriate for me to ask. And if there wasn't anybody to ask, it would be appropriate for me to take it.
So that's a fascinating, that would be a fascinating, I never thought of that question before. I mean, if we were to reverse the imagery there.
Take it as a command.
Well, if we're put in the place of the giver, I mean, yeah, the giver. Okay, let's try to concretize this as best we can. And this is, I don't know how to ask this question very well, so you'll have to struggle with me here. But what is an example of this process that we've been talking about? Ask, and it will be given. How does that go on within you, between you and your relations? And why is that important? An important dynamic that Jesus is describing here for us as people in the vineyard in the kingdom.
I was thinking of in relationships how important it is when you have a need to ask or to bring it out into the open, and it changes the whole relationship. I think a lot of times we keep needs inside of us and we don't say anything and assume that the other person doesn't somehow really know what our needs are. But it's really necessary for us to say it, to ask for it, so that the other person can respond.
Okay.
How it works for me, Scott, is I open myself up to listen. Listen with all my heart.
Okay.
I get in the way quite a bit, but I try to listen.
Right. So it would be the conscious act of listening for whatever is going to come or what's already there that we haven't noticed if we use the...
Somewhere along the same lines is, I do a lot of asking when it comes to needing guidance in making decisions. And it is a need to listen. But the sort of the it in that case is the decision. What should I do?
That comes to you or bubbles up in the course of of asking, which is the intentional, conscious choice of quieting myself down and listening. I've had several posters in my lifetime, and they all disappear, and they say, don't just do something, stand there.
Well, from the parent's standpoint, I find myself with my child, maybe I see him climbing on the cupboard, trying to get a dish out of the cupboard, and said, why didn't you ask for help instead of trying to do it on your own?
Okay. Yeah. Good.
The whole thing of trust, as you said, and faith has been just a real dilemma for me. Probably a lot, not being able to trust a lot in my childhood, okay, and even in my adult life. And this week, I thought I was reading a book called Positive Imagery by Norman Vincent Peale, and then this whole thing on affirmations by Pastor Bostwick. It has a line here that says, "You have what you accept." And I finally thought, I've been told through affirmations for 12 years, but I had this inner gut level belief they won't work for me. And yet God is saying, I have given you. And that the difference is the way that I ask is that, please God, give me. So I started to write on note cards scriptures, which he says, all these scriptures are affirmations. They're God saying, I gave you this. So I put, Sharon, I give you faith. I will do this. I am writing scriptures that apply. One was I've had so little energy for a year. So I said, I claim the energy of Christ. I claim the physical strength of Christ, which he said he already gave me. And there's been a big change in my energy level in 3 days.
because it's already there, but I was asking and pleading instead of doing like my five-year-old. When he comes and asks me why the sun doesn't drop out of the sky, he expects me to know. He believes that I'm going to tell him what he wants. So God also expects me to claim it. But I didn't believe he would deliver.
That's fascinating, isn't it? To somehow, again, consciously, for some reason the words came to me, choose my chosenness.
That's right. Take it as an act of the will, not a gut.
Yeah, that somehow it changes my whole relationship to it. Yeah.
That's a very good point that you just made. I think sometimes we have flour in the cupboard, eggs and milk and chocolate chips, and we sit around asking God to give us chocolate chip cookies.
I think that's the best theological statement. I'm going to steal that. Yeah, so there's something about, you know, bringing that to consciousness and saying, hey, it would be neat to have some chocolate chip cookies and then develop a partnership with God. You know, God's provided the raw materials there. Stuff's already there. It's already been given, right? But to get involved, you know, get our hands dirty, take some playfulness to do that. Now it comes to the chocolate chip cookies. Yeah.
Well, most of the things that we are indicating here seem to be possessions in the term. Yeah.
Okay.
We go back a chapter in Matthew, exactly what was before us last night at Vespers was that we should not worry about these things. We should be to Him and those will be provided. So, no, we don't ask for the chocolate chip cookies. No, we don't ask for the Mercedes. We ask Him to do the best that He can for us. He knows what our needs are. He'll provide for us. Let us not ask for those things.
Okay.
In line with what Kirk said, we had some friends just recently who were being transferred and they had to move.
Yeah.
And they prayed about selling their house and worried a lot about it and everything. And then they realized that that's the wrong approach, strictly from the verse that Kirk just mentioned.
Okay.
That worrying about it is unbelief. Sin can cause some things. And turned it over to God. And when God's ready for that house to sell, it's not for them to worry about it. And their house will open next week.
Okay.
Okay,
so
I prayed thankingly in advance, yeah, too.
So in terms of Jesus' statement here, asking would be the act of consciously what? It would be the act of
faith. Of turning it over to God?
Yeah.
He knows what is best for
yeah.
us.
Okay.
Just turn your heart to Him.
Okay. Any other images quickly? Yeah.
I have a little problem with that for me.
Yeah.
You know, not for everyone.
Yeah.
Almost like maybe the asking is, God, help me to be a little more creative here in selling this house. Maybe I got the wrong agent. Or maybe something needs to be done here that I haven't done. As opposed to, but maybe that's because I like to be more in control of things, you know, as opposed
okay.
to being a bit passive, and that just might be my personality.
Mm-hmm.
As a saying, you know, God can, you know, let's help me with my creativity in dealing with this issue, because I can help make the cookies.
Mm-hmm.
Not that they just won't come in the mail tomorrow.
Right.
And I'm part of the creation to be creative. So I'm more comfortable with helping to be part of the creative agent that helps deal with the issue rather than the passive person where it just happens too. So maybe I'm there saying, asking for
yeah.
more
okay.
resources
mm-hmm.
to deal with the issue.
The word anxiety comes to me in that.
Okay.
That is, there's one thing about our being anxious about things,
so that we're not able to be creative in a way, if we understand this all in the context of God's grace and forgiveness, it frees us so we can participate in that creativity without being
right.
overly anxious, as again, from the Sermon on the Mount.
Yeah, I like to look at that too. God didn't create us to sit around and be stupid and dumb either.
Right. Yeah.
You know, he gave us a creative mind to act and carry out.
So there's a time, perhaps, of asking to be open to possibilities we haven't dared to dream about. There may be a time of letting go and needing to be out of control. There may be a time...
And that might be very good to know that we're out of
control. Yeah. There may be a time of needing to be more in control. Okay.
There's a time, too, for footwork.
Yeah.
We can't discount that. The footwork is...
Okay.
There's a chaplain up in Alaska that had a sign on his desk and it said, if you want something, get off your knees and take action.
Okay.
Sometimes I think we don't want to wait for the whole answer to that. You know, the classic example is the Orson Welles. You know, someone turns on and says, what is this? And they heard the Orson Welles description of the end, and they didn't hear the whole answer to what is this.
Yeah.
So they really fell into a panic. And in that context of hearing the whole answer, you know, not just taking the first opening phrase and saying, that's the answer, but especially with Scripture. You know, we go to Scripture with a question, and we say, where is the answer? And you begin, and you find something that you see as the answer, as part of the answer. And sometimes I find it very helpful to say, ask myself if I've got the whole answer yet, you know, because I think sometimes I get running away with it, with the beginning of the answer, not the whole thing.
Yeah, waiting. The psalmist talks about waiting for God. The whole act, the conscious act of waiting, not a passive waiting, is an interesting image to struggle with.
It's like following directions. You can either dive right into the task and then mess it up, or you can read through systematically. Most of us have a very hard time doing.
Yeah, I have a hard time. Okay, let's move on to the next image that Jesus gives us here, which I think is interesting. And that's the word seek. What does the word seek mean? What are all the possibilities of that word?
I think it includes the things we've been talking about. To me, it's an active word, an action word. Seek means more to me than to just sit and wait.
Okay.
Go out and look for it.
Go out and look for it?
Searching.
Searching.
I think it's acknowledging that you don't know something.
Okay.
Or that you don't have something, that you need something.
I think it can also mean don't let anything stop you and don't give up. And it can mean, you know, just anything it costs. You really need something or want something. Sometimes you're willing to not stop and to give anything it costs.
Okay. Right. So there's a commitment there.
It's a broadening of your horizons.
A broadening of your horizons, yeah.
It doesn't say look just a little while.
Just
seek.
Okay. We're so good, right? Just we'd like, you know, what? 2 minute spirituality or something.
Yeah. With little kids, once how many times have you told them it's in your room, you know, and they go in your room, they open the door, it is not in your room. Did you look? You know, when you walk in there, here it is, you know.
Oh, great image, right?
Grown-ups do that. Russell, my husband, will tell me to get something out of the cupboard. I couldn't find it. He comes, this is right here. I don't know if it's an easy cup out of the line.
That's kind of how we do our relationship with God, right? We open the door quick and shut it. We don't see what we want to see.
A great poet, Schiller, once said that if God offered me the truth in the right hand and the search for truth in the left hand, I'd select the left hand.
Okay, what's involved in seeking? I think it's a wonderful image.
It might mean some paths or trails or dealings that you're uncomfortable with.
Okay.
It might mean you've got to go to AAA and get the newest map and throw away your old one.
Okay. All right.
I think it might mean to trust your intuitive, to stop for just a second and one of the places I do a lot of seeking is I do a lot of traveling and I have to find someplace. And I don't know where it is. So I'm sitting here kind of saying, I wonder where it is. And I have some kind of intuitive sense about which way to go, which is, you know, to hear that intuitive answer or that intuitive guidance that's there to tell me which direction to go, to stop and hear that.
Okay. Yeah.
Excuse me for, again, it could be that we don't do all these things alone. That sometimes, like, my wife has a hard time with directions. And she knows to give me the map because I'm better with directions. So in a sense, if we're thinking of these some of these things that we do in our lives is not just merely alone, but maybe with a spouse or a friend or a group, that maybe we have to let some other people take over from time to time and be part of the seeking and not simply say, I read the map, I make the decisions, God just tell me. Because other people have gifts too around us, and we don't let those gifts come out.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And not just simply tackle life always alone, even in the midst of a group or a club or an organization or a family. Because maybe the seeking is the seeking with others and using their strengths, their abilities. Yeah. So those chocolate chip cookies would be ready when we come home.
I'm deeply impressed with one of the things that happens here at Holden is that there are lots of seekers that find their way here. Some of the seekers are those that have experienced some tremendous losses and they're seeking to repair life. Others are just not knowing where they need to be, and they have arrived here wondering. So it isn't that they've got a great loss that they're working through, but they're wondering about the next steps for themselves, and they're seeking with not anything specific in mind. It's kind of, and I think Holden does a kind of wonderful job of allowing those people to be, for all of us to be. I've always appreciated the fact that Holden, you didn't have to go to anything if you didn't want to, except we're encouraged to go to evening vespers. Or you could go to everything, get your mind just blown out in all directions. And after 2 days you're going, it's time to head up the trail. And so there's.
I'm thinking of seeking, I think of an instrument that I use in consulting, it's called self-development contracting.
Uh-huh.
Gives you a path for getting to where you want to be with a behavioral change. And one of the instructions is, be sure to list all the people who can help you along the way. Even those you don't necessarily like. And part of seeking, part of spiritual journey, part of search is encountering not only those people who maybe we don't particularly like, but those who don't particularly like us. But there's still so much to be learned in that searching, seeking process. And the fact you may become friends after all of it anyway.
Yeah.
But even those who you do not necessarily like or trust or know can be very much a part of that sequence.
Maybe at times even the most helpful to you.
Yes.
they teach you how you can deal with your adversary. And we all run into adversaries.
All three of these words we have here, ask, seek, and knock, imply permission that we are in need of something that we cannot supply for ourselves. This to me is one of the difficulties here, to admit that I don't have it within myself and I need to go out and get some help. I think the society we have, it puts a very great emphasis on self-reliance, having the capability within yourself. It's opposite from what Janine was talking about here, where it's perfectly acceptable and normal to go out to everybody in the community and ask for help. Okay. And at least I find this a very major stumbling block to even get started on this, because I'm hung up on this fact that there must be something wrong with me if I'm not self-sufficient and need to go out and do this asking and seeking and knocking and searching for assistance.
I think that's particularly true with us men. As speaking as a therapist for a moment, there are many more women that come into therapy than men, and I don't think it's because women. I know it's not because women have more problems than men. But men have difficult for us to admit our need, or that we can't take care of it all ourselves, and that we get this sort of macho. It's certainly true for all of us, but I just have to think how true that is for us. Man, we want to live in isolation, self-made. What is that image in our society? We call it the self-made man. I think that's a good image too. I mean, I think it's good we use the word man there, because it's a kind of negative masculine image, and self-made man. Anyway, yeah. So what does it mean to acknowledge that we need something we don't have, we need each other, or that our conscious viewpoint is too limited, and therefore we need to put ourselves in a position of receiving new insight, new perspective, and so forth. Now it says, seek and you will and you will find, right? Find. What's involved with the word find?
Marvel.
What?
Marvel.
Marvel. When you find something, you marvel.
Okay. Eureka.
Eureka.
Okay.
Discovery. Okay.
Relief.
What?
Relief.
Relief. Okay. All right.
I think it's something that was already there, but it was hidden.
Okay. Like those that sought the gold, it was already there. Right, the treasure. Jesus has many parables about finding the treasure, right?
That could be the scary time, because it might mean great changes. It might mean giving up something. It might mean go get a new man.
Sometimes what we find is another human being or a person,
okay,
or a relationship. And it seems, I was just thinking about a poem that's been so meaningful to me by Rod McKeown. It says, one of the elements of the poem says, offer yourself to others, but offer the whole, for so many want only a piece of it. And it's been so important to me to offer up my whole self. Mm-hmm. If you find a person is the answer, you have to take the whole person.
Okay. Even that which you don't want.
You should say especially.
Especially. Okay. Okay.
That's true in the reverse, too, in terms of receiving, receive of the Lord.
Okay.
Not just turn it hard.
Okay. When you find something, what's involved in that? What does that word describe to you?
It can be making a home.
Okay.
It's recognition of your discovery of some sort.
Okay.
To find would imply either a bonus or a satisfaction.
Okay.
If you were actively seeking it, well then you're satisfied you now have it.
Okay.
Or you think you have it. Or to just find something unexpectedly.
Something that was lost?
Yes.
It doesn't necessarily mean that you find the object or the answer. You may find a way to get to the answer.
Okay. You may find a question or a key. Yeah.
Okay. And more questions.
Or more questions. Find it. I always right. Yeah. It has for me. It has an element of surprise, and that's why I was like that. Seek and you will find. Well, it said first of all you'll be troubled, and after you've been troubled, then you'll marvel. There's when you find something, it's unexpected, often. Think of all the images of Jesus of the kingdom comes to you like a thief in the night, the least expected time. It's often a meaningful coincidence. It doesn't add up. I met Jeanette in a lunch line. There she was.
Best chocolate chip you've ever seen.
And Jesus is telling us that he's describing for us the vineyard, what the kingdom is like. And these images are just wonderful. Yeah.
Something I was thinking of this with the finding. In the seeking, there's an element of hope. I was thinking, what it triggered it was a poem that a friend of ours wrote on suicide, and he's describing the kitchen drawer, the messy drawer that has all this stuff, and he was looking for a particular part to something or other, and couldn't find it, and went through this drawer of all this junk. And suddenly didn't find that, but found something else that was really important that he'd been looking for a long time. And he was talking about if you have everything lined up, all the nuts and bolts and little jars lined up like this, you may miss something. And so here, the seeking, I relate to, you may discover something totally unexpected.
Yeah, that's such a marvelous image. You think you have your life all organized. In other words, you've got everything in bottles, so you know exactly where it is. It's a hopeless situation. But if you've got a good messy drawer, there's always hope, you see. There's always hope.
Finding is a miracle.
Okay, in the couple of minutes, go ahead. What were you gonna say?
Yes.
Have you got a good message?
I'm tugging that. Yeah.
It's biblical. It's biblical, right? Yeah. Okay. What does all this say about what's required of us?
Reaction. Activity.
Pray without ceasing.
Okay.
Recognition that we have to go out, the answers to our questions are outside ourselves.
Okay. Or outside what we know, anyway.
Yeah.
Okay.
May I submit surrender?
Okay. Okay. What is the implication of what Jesus is saying for us in terms of what's required of us?
Faith. You got to believe that by going to the person, by going to God, that the answer will be there.
By taking that step.
Acknowledgement of a weakness.
All right. It's an acknowledgement of a weakness or a limitation.
Not afraid to say it. Get up off your duff and do something about it. You're doing these things that are bothering you.
Okay. All right.
Not afraid to take the risk because there might be great changes on the other end of listening.
Okay.
And the asking and the waiting.
So what's being required of us is there is an intentionality about it. There is a bringing to consciousness rather than just letting things, rather than just mucking around. And what's the promise? How would you describe the promise?
God is able and willing to supply all of our needs.
Okay. What else? How else might you say? Yeah. Oh, you're waving.
Oh, I'm sorry.
What's the promise? What's the result?
Fulfillment.
You will.
What?
You will.
All right.
I know me. You will. It's a definite assurance.
Right. You will find it. It. It may be different than anything you imagined it would have been, but it will emerge. It will.
Inclusive language, it.
Yeah. Okay. What else could we say about this? What's required of us and what's the promise?
Belief.
What?
Belief.
Belief?
Believe.
Believe.
Somewhere it says, seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all these things shall be added unto you. So I wonder if the if then is the kingdom of God, and not the kingdom of what we think.
Okay, that's a very important point, that asking, usually when we think of asking, we receive, we think of asking for Mercedes and getting it, but we've been talking about asking so much broader terms, in terms of staying with the questions, of bringing to consciousness our need, of recognizing that we need to move, not knowing where that's going to take us or what's going to emerge. But the promise is, Jesus says, that if we're willing to take that, make those kinds of choices, and make those kinds of commitments, something new will bubble up for us. It may not be anything like what we anticipated, maybe totally different, but that somehow God is the activity, the seed has already there. The question is, will it blossom? It's already a given. That's an insight too, isn't it? That it's already a potentiality. It's not like, it's not there. And that somehow asking or making the need conscious releases the possibility. So, yeah, go ahead.
Castro, Fidel Castro, back when there was hope for Cuba. I suppose there's still hope for Cuba now. That's a terrible statement. But anyhow, he brought out this thing about need, that if a person has a need, then that need has to be recognized and worked with. And he was talking with a group of people, and not just an introvert need, but an extrovert need.
Okay.
And really looking for that for a group.
It really, to me, it illustrates the partnership that's needful. Another really neat thing about Holden, I think, that I'm really impressed with is the kind of intentionality, the kind of conscious choices that are made about being a partner, partners not only with people, but partners with all of creation. So the garbage gets recycled and it comes out as nourishment rather than is thrown away and just piles up. That's a marvelous image for us to take internally. What would it mean to work with our own garbage? Yeah, internally, consciously, intentionally, so that it turns into fertilizer rather than just putting it on everybody else. Or just letting it muck around in us so it drags us down, but intentionally. You know, they put the pipes in it so it breathes and they cover it up. It is kind of a smelly mess initially, but it does wonderful things in the end. Well, I thank you for, yes, Bill, we actually have the last word here.
I like to believe there's an entirely different dimension to asking than we talked about.
Okay.
And that, to me anyway, is that other passage, we don't even know what to ask for. And therefore, as Christians, we live in a condition of asking even if we don't know, and those asking questions being answered even if we're not aware of it.
So it's staying with the conscious recognition that we don't know.
The Christian condition is one of asking even if we're not aware that we're doing that and receiving.
Okay, all right.
That's why we pray thy will be done.
Okay, all right.
In lapidary, if I got it right, the findings are the things that go around the gym that help it be useful to display. So in lapidary, the finding is not the most precious thing in the middle, but it's what helps, what enables the gym to get put to some useful purpose.
Okay. Well, I hope we've all been stretched and we've walked away with a few questions for ourselves, and thank you for being such wonderful partners this morning
thank you.
In this process.